Going back to the college experience, we was broke. We didn't have shit. Like, we had no money. Like, I was driving a 1996 Ford Ranger with a shell on the back. It was a pickup truck, basically.
What year was this?
This is 2003, 2004.
Because on my recruiting trip with you, we was in the Benz.
Y'all, you know I mean, I can't. Look, look. And then, look. Check it out. I mean, you know, I can't do no lying. Hold on, hold on, hold on. And then, listen, listen.
Don't do lying.
No, I'm not. Check it out. Yeah. Am I tripping?
I didn't have that.
I can't make this up. Dwayne Jarrett was the wide receiver. He pull up in the range.
What? No, he said he lying. Stop playing, bro.
Yo, look.
Hey, he put extras on
a Benz?
He put extras on it.
He put extras on it. He so hungry. In a Benz.
We had to fight to get a meal. Yeah, wrongfully accused. We had to fight to get the pills. That's why we right to get a deal. He on the team, he gotta eat, you know. Despite the skills, fat. He been riding for the fam. You got a light that we in wheels straight up. But in the past bad, work up in the trash bag. I'll pass a lot to take the test before I pass class. Yeah, and my family needed bread. I had to come correct. That's why I keep airing it out like I just passed gas.
This is a big deal for you.
It is, not is.
It's a big deal for you. I've never seen Shady start struck at all. No, don't make that face, bro.
I've never struck.
You've been talking about this for months. You've been talking about this. You've been talking about this.
Nah, I have. The thing, this is why. First of all, as running backs, right? We're both running backs. They try to write us off. They try to say we're disposable. They throw us away. And you talk to a guy that's played over 10 years, right? Myself and Reggie. Reggie Bush, before I introduce this guy, let's talk about him real quick. When I was in high school, right, everybody was wearing the area codes underneath their eyes, right? Or anything that inspired them for my mom and grandma.
Right, right. Reggie was the first?
He was the first one to do that. First one. Yeah. And like, to keep it real, a lot of running backs, because back then, they was all bruisers. Let's think about it. My style, my skill set, my style, it come from Reggie Bush. I probably won't, you know. See, when we argue, I'm gonna tell y'all that. You know what I'm saying? but just keeping it real. So when he came up on the board, as far as we could talk to Reggie Bush, I'm like, dang. And we had a lot of great people. I mean, from Kyrie to all them guys, you know, Aaron Donald. But for me, it's so special because Reggie Bush, he's a trendsetter, right? And I just want to give you your flowers, man. And thanks for
appreciate
coming
that,
on the show.
Appreciate that, my boy.
He was autographed. You get anybody got a football?
No. Look, and then to start off real quick, I'll give you a quick story. You know, I love stories. I'm in high school now. Obviously, since it's over now. It's no secret that USC break rules. Nah, man, they break rules. And Pete Carroll, right? This is USC. Pete Carroll, he comes to my high school, right? To see me. I was a big deal. I don't know if Pac-Man thinks that. I was a big deal. Pete Carroll, right? So he only comes to see probably the top backs in the country. Anyway, so he said, listen, I'm going to have Reggie Bush reach out, this and that, the third. I'm like, he going to call me? I'm like, yeah. So a few times, Reggie Bush texts me. I'm like, oh.
Well, you thought it was Reggie.
You're right. Probably... Okay, whatever it was. So then I have.
Was it really you?
I take an official visit to USC, right? And he hosts me for the weekend, but it's only really for one night. He is Hollywood. You know what I mean? But I'm in high school, so we go to the mall. As we go to the stores, right, we see at the time was, remember the he go up to talk to Reggie, like, yo, you know what I mean? And my eyes, I'm a 17. I'm like, this dude's a star. Reggie's like, yeah, what's up, man? What's up? Right. So we go into the store. Reggie says, yo, look, I was with my uncle. He said, yo, get whatever y'all want. They closed the store down. Do you remember this? He probably remember this.
I don't remember this.
Dog.
Because it was his life.
I was like, I'm 17 at the time. He's probably.
I remember hosting him.
Right.
I remember hanging out. And
was,
you know.
I was like, bro.
I just don't remember going to the store.
Dog.
So, like.
Big time. Y'all ain't gonna lie. When he first came to Buffalo, I was like, man, like. Like competitive. Oh, they bringing Reggie in here? And then because I was always a fan, but I knew he can play. But they say he was getting older. His first touch, you probably remember this. He went left, right. I was like, oh, he's still gonna play. Like, oh. So I always like.
Bro, I played with this dude in Buffalo.
Yeah.
This dude, I swear to God, every day he had the locker room telling a story.
That's right.
He got some kind of story. He's telling the entire locker room. Hey, by the way, tell him about how many times I whooped you in Tunk. You didn't tell him that? Yeah, oh, you didn't tell him about beat the brakes off that boy in Tunk.
He didn't want to talk about
you
that.
You ain't the only one.
He didn't want to talk about that in tongues.
Y'all want me to make it funny though? So we go to Buffalo. My mom and dad, my mom and dad married for like 38 years, so we real tight. And me, her, and my brother, and my dad, we all on the same text thread. So when he got there, he's like, oh, how's Reggie doing? I said, Reggie, cool. You know, he all right, cool. They're like, wait, so you ain't telling me you like a big fan? I'm like, nah, not really. Hey, what up, Reg? How you all right? All right, cool.
Yeah.
So, but look,
when did that click for you? When you realized that you were a star and you were different, right? Because in college, I mean, I was just a college football player. I was a student athlete. Yeah,
yeah. UCF? See,
you know, I don't know if it was because you were out here in L.A.
Way
and you're rubbing shoulders with other athletes and artists.
Yeah.
Like, when did it click for you?
Well, I always knew I was different. I always felt like that. From the time I was young, when I first started playing football, the second game that I ever played, and before I get to that story, my mom didn't want me to play football. She thought I'd get hurt, it's too aggressive, too physical. And so, you know, being a protector that she was, she wanted to protect me from, you know, those potential injuries or whatever it was. The game was way more violent back then. Y'all know, it was way different back then.
Right.
So the second game I played, I had 8 touchdowns and 544 rushing yards in one game. And my parents was like, all right, it good. It gonna be all right. But I always knew I was fast. And I always used that to, I think, my strength. You know, and whatever I did, you know, at school, you really find out like how nice you are in the schoolyard first.
Right, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's where like my first memories of like playing football, playing basketball, and you start to just find out like who's nice. Yeah. And so, you know, once I got into football, it was just like a big awakening for me. You know, I found my passion. I found the thing that I loved. I found the thing that I always wanted to do. And, you know, I was heavily influenced by the men in that sport. And so, you know, for me at that time period, I didn't have a great relationship with my real dad. My real dad's born and raised here in LA, went to Crenshaw High School. A lot of my family's from Inglewood.
Yeah.
But then I was raised by my mom and my stepdad in San Diego. So for me, not having that real father figure in my life, you know, like I wanted, like I needed, I turned to football. And so football really became the man of my life for me. And so, you know, my first coaches, I'll never forget. First coaches that I had when I was 9 years old, I started playing football when I was 9. And the first football coaches that I had were just very strict, very mean, what I thought was mean at the time, very aggressive. And so one guy, a little short Hawaiian dude, his name was Coach Keola. And he was mean. He would make you do up downs all day. And I could still hear his voice imprinted in my brain of when we had to do up downs, he just had a sharp just hit, hit, hit. And it just felt like he could go all day. You know what I'm saying? And so I think having him and then another coach, I was with him at the time too, his name was Coach Peely, and he was a Samoan dude. And you know, if you know any Samoans, big as hell.
Right.
Right. And so those two coaches were kind of like the disciplinarians of our football team. And really, I felt like they kind of set the foundation for me, right? Because they taught me how to work hard. They taught me how to be disciplined. They kind of set that foundation for me of what it meant, what it took, you know, to be great. And I credit them because that was my first introduction to the sport. And that left a big impact on me. And so from that point on, I kind of rolled with that, you know what I'm saying?
You talked about, you know, the game being violent back then and being different.
Mm-hmm.
But also the mindset and the mentality is different from an athlete, from an athlete's perspective too, or athlete's approach. We talk about discipline, work ethic.
Yeah.
Bro, they don't work like we used to work. They don't have that discipline.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. Like they up playing games. They want to be streamers and gamers. It's different now. Yeah. Back to what Shady was saying. How did you get to USC? Mm-hmm. How did you get to SC? Because I think that's like I you still didn't answer my question.
Yeah.
Right. Because you talked about football and the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know when it clicked for you being in LA, coming from San Diego, coming to LA, and then it's like, yo. Get whatever you want, Shady. And then he dropped the whole, closed the store. You in college. And I got a lot of stuff that day. I did.
You know, I think, again, like I always knew I was different. And I tried to use that to my advantage. You know what I'm saying? I tried to be as different as I could from the rest of the pack because I felt like that separated me from everybody else. And, you know, when I got to USC, so I was recruited also by Pete as well. I remember him coming to my high school. I think when you're getting recruited in high school and you start to feel, okay, now it's real, you know what I'm saying? Now I'm that much closer to my next, to that next step, which is the college level. That's when it starts to feel a little different. That's when you start to feel that shift, I think, internally.
Right.
That's when you start to feel that kind of like that shift around you where, you know, I'm on my way to that next stop, you know, wherever that's going to be. And so for me, in high school, I balled out. And you know, at the high school level, I think that's where I started to feel the difference because I was winning awards. We were, you know, winning every game. We were really good. We had a TV show that it was only one TV show back then that covered all the high schools, and it was on KUSI 9. It's called the Prep Pigskin Report, and so
Prep Pigskin Report.
Okay. That's what it was called.
Pigskin's the football.
They still got viewers. It. They still and they still have the show, but that was like our. ESPN at the time. What I was saying, ESPN, because I work for Fox, obviously. But I don't
know. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to be.
Wait, we work for Fox.
Yeah, we work for Fox. You know what I'm saying
about that?
But that was like the first, you know, ESPN, like for us, you know, for high school football. And so when they show you highlights on TV, you're like, oh, like, that's me. You know what I'm saying? I'm on there mixing people up on the football field, putting their foot in the ground, creating highlights, and you start to see that immediate feedback, you know what I'm saying? It becomes almost like a drug, like a high, like, okay, I want to do it again,
yeah.
And do it again, and do it again. And so I think at the high school level, that's when I started to separate myself. I think from everybody else, I started to work a little harder, longer, put more focus into the sport, working out, lifting weights, and just honestly trying to be the hardest worker on the football field.
Like,
that was always my goal everywhere I was at.
Yeah.
At college, at USC, you know, we worked hard, man. We worked our ass off. And to me, I felt like I became a man at that stop at USC because the practices that we had, the battles that we had each and every day, it was like we were trying to kill each other. You know what I'm saying? Linebackers was trying to knock the running back's heads off, you know, in one-on-one pass blocking drills or, you know, one-on-one, you know, routes. You know, or 7-on-7 or 9-on-7, yeah, all that shit.
Back then.
It was different.
You can't touch nobody in practice.
It was a bloodbath. And so that time, that stop, you know, really I felt like helped me to become a man because a lot of the things that I learned at that stop, the things that I had to go through at that stop, it all built me up to be the man I am today. And so, you know, as far as the celebrity factor, I felt like the celebrity factor.
I was trying to get messy. See, that's what I wanted.
I felt like the celebrity factor. The celebrity factor started at USC. You know what I'm saying?
My question is, like, for us, you was the mecca of the media. Mm-hmm. Like the value of fame that you had early on, college, and I said they might not want to say like, and from the people that you was with and dating, you know, the Kim Kardashians.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You know, from the outside, like, we like, God damn, you got everything. He got everything. Like, was it healthy? Was it not healthy? Like, how did you deal with the volume of fame that you had young? Like,
I think there was some good and some bad. I think for me at that time period, I was dealing with, I was still dealing with a lot of the Heisman stuff. And so at that time period, when I'm deeply immersed into Hollywood because of, you know, who I'm dating and stuff like that, that was not the best time for me because I was hurting on the inside. You know what I'm saying? I was still messed up on the inside. And the thing is
what was hurting? What do you mean you're dealing with
just spiritually? I was broken from.
Is that when they took? You told me when they took it?
Heisman? Yeah, from losing the Heisman Trophy.
Oh, I was never gave that back.
I probably shouldn't have. You're probably right, but
oh, you wait.
We'll go
up.
Back to that story. We're going to go back. I got a story for that.
But you gave.
I gave it back.
Oh, hold on.
Damn. Yeah. But I got a story. It's a story for that, but. I was spiritually on the inside broken, and I was hurt.
What year was this? Because when you, because like you're talking about college,
2006,
and then you talked about Heisman, so you obviously you won it, but then you gave it back.
So
a
this
couple
was
years.
Like my first 5 years in the league when I was at New Orleans.
You still was carrying that?
Yeah, we were still. There was, I mean, there was the investigation. I don't know, remember how long the investigation went on, but just from giving it back, but just dealing with it too. You know what I'm saying? Like, the thing is that when you go through trauma, right, and that could be in a relationship level, it could be football, it could be anything, but when you go through trauma, how you deal with that trauma, I think, is the next step, is what's next. And a lot of us don't deal with our trauma the right way. You know what I'm saying? A lot of us internalize it, especially when you're in a position when you got a lot of money and you're young and maybe you don't have a ton of guidance, the right guidance, you know, that can be toxic. You know what I'm saying? At that time period. And so for me, there was just, you know, partying or just not focusing on bettering myself as an athlete. Because there was a lot of summers I felt like I wasted time. You know what I'm saying? I felt like there were summers, there was times where I was just wasting time and I should have been putting more into my craft. You know what I'm saying? More into the sport, giving back more into just my body. Because at some point, you know, our bodies start to fail us in this sport. Injuries and all that kind of stuff. So for me, I think going through the Hollywood portion of that and being deeply immersed in that while I was still spiritually broken on the inside was toxic for me.
What did that look like in the off season when you talk about deep in Hollywood, right? Yeah.
Just partying, going out, partying, you know, vacationing here and there and just blowing money, going to clubs, spending money.
We all did that.
I feel like, you know, you guys, you lived in LA.
Yeah.
You lived in Atlanta, right? There's some Atlanta, New York, LA is jumping. A lot of guys, they set up shop in the off season in some of those places.
Yeah.
So that the lifestyle was different for y'all. Nowadays, I feel like all our athletes have these distractions.
Mm-hmm.
We wasn't traveling like that back then. I'm talking about the league, Pack. You was different.
I was somewhere every weekend.
Yeah. But most guys,
that's what I'm saying.
Guys wasn't traveling to LA. Guys wasn't going to Paris for Fashion Week. Guys wasn't going to Miami.
We were going to New York. Yeah. We was going to, you know, Texas,
Vegas.
Dallas, Houston, Vegas.
Right.
And going hard, blowing money, you know what I'm saying? And partying and living it up and enjoying, because that's the thing about when you get hurt, right? When you go through trauma, when you go through these experiences, and if you don't deal with it head on, right? You internalize, you find other ways to deal with it, right? Like you find other ways to cope with it, right? To please your flesh or whatever that is, you know what I'm saying? And so for me, you know, I really felt like those time periods where, you know, there was times where I wasted time, where I should have been putting more back into the sport, into my body. And, you know, that's it.
So if you had to go in time, right? Because you talk about things you would have did, but like, what are some of the things that, in detail, mm-hmm. you would tell that Reggie Bush that was going through the stuff with the Heisman, dating the celebrity girl and trying to manage my NFL career? What would you tell that Reggie Bush?
Just a celebrity girl. Say her name. Like,
oh, Kim Kardashian.
I don't have a beef with her. You know what I mean? I like him. I'm just trying to be respectful to my brother. Because we all know Kim Kardashian.
Put a name on it.
What in the Kardashian? Kim, the younger one? My bad. Let me not get excited.
But how would you deal with all that, telling that Reggie Bush now? Like,
man, I would... That's such a great question. Bro.
I do ask the best questions.
because I would have. So this is what I would have told myself. I would have dealt with. Because at that time period, I didn't feel like there was anybody that I could relate to. Who has been through this? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Who has been through that I'm dealing with right now? That I'm going through every single day. The stress that I'm dealing with. The internal, you know, hurt and pain that I'm dealing with. The relationships, all this stuff meshed into one big ass, you know what I'm saying, life experience. And I never felt like there was somebody that I could reach out to that could relate to the Heisman Trophy. You know what I'm saying? Could relate to, you know, the Hollywood fame portion of it. Could relate to, you know, what we're doing at USC, playing the national championships every year. You know, I never felt like there was anybody I could relate to.
You know what I'm saying? And that's why I say that can be a toxic place, because, you know, when you feel like there's nobody to talk to, and you just figure it out on your own, you know, you try to go deal with it on your own. And, you know, a lot of times that, depending on, you know, where you are in life, it can go either way.
Did you ever talk to a therapist back then, or you ain't, did you ever?
Football was my therapy.
That's
football
crazy.
Football was my therapy.
That's crazy, B, because I'm sitting here thinking like, damn, I've been in the same similar situation, mm-hmm. but not with football. You right. get what I'm saying? So I just, when I got suspended with the Vegas thing,
yep.
I'm like, God damn, who can I call just to—
Who been through this?
Just to give me some kind of comfort.
Advice. Yeah, advice.
I know that everything is gonna be okay.
Exactly.
And then, you know, I shut down from everybody. Like, just me in the house, which was the worst thing to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Cause you admit, cause you, the man you are, you gonna internalize it. No, I can handle this. I'm right. gonna deal with it on my own.
Right, and if I had the resources that I had now as far as the people I talk to weekly, you know what I mean? Having different outlets for when things are a little bagged up and getting some kind of confirmation. That's hard though, bro. That's hard.
It just amazes me, you know, that we're having this discussion, right? Because Reggie Bush, USC, Heisman Trophy winner. You go on to the New Orleans Saints, drafted in what, top five? Were you top five?
Number two overall.
Number second, two. That's pick. A big difference. Number two overall. He was number two overall. Then y'all won the Super Bowl. But
a couple years later.
You know, you live in that Hollywood lifestyle, which I think that's part of the journey.
Yep.
You understand? So it's like, I mean, what are you going to do when you're 24, 25? That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to enjoy mm-hmm. some of it.
Not everybody.
But you were struggling.
Yeah.
Pac-Man, same thing. You were picked what? Six?
Six, yeah.
Six overall. Pac-Man Jones. And
I remember when he got drafted, all the chains that he had, the Pac-Man chain. I'll never forget that, bro. He had the Pac-Man yeah. chain on it on when you got drafted, right?
The big Pac-Man. Yeah.
I'll never forget that. I thought that was so dope.
So
that was fun.
So, you know, when you don't have somebody that you feel like you can relate to, you know what I'm saying? And you got a lot of money, you got a lot of yes men around you,
right.
you know what I'm saying? You got a lot of people around you that's trying to benefit, you know, from where you are in life. Again, that can be a toxic place, you know what I'm saying? And you know, for me, like I said, football became my therapy,
right.
you know what I'm saying? And I don't know, where would we, any of us, be without football?
Without
you know what I'm saying? Like, football, we don't even know the things that football saved us from.
What?
You know what I'm saying? But I felt like at that time period, being able to go to the facility, being able to go into practice and hit somebody or lift some weights, or it was just, that was my time away. That was like my peace. The football field became my sanctuary, which is crazy because when you think about it, the football field is the most unpeaceful place.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's the loudest place. Toxic. It's the craziest. It's the most volatile.
That was my joy though, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was,
but
that
think
was,
about,
you get to get away from all the outside
exactly.
noise.
Yes.
And for these, whatever it
block,
is, 3 hours, you know what I mean?
Nobody can get to you.
Nobody can get to you.
Nobody
you can't answer
you.
Your phone. Damn,
so let me ask y'all this question. We go around. 2006,
mm-hmm.
2002 to 2006, you was at SC.
2003
to 2006, you're at SC.
Yeah,
then you get drafted.
We did it for 4 years, 5 years. Like,
then you get drafted.
I only went three, Shady. Know your facts.
So go anywhere.
I didn't go to UCO or none of that,
Shady. We gonna get like 4 degrees. Sorry, brother.
I was four and done, but anyway. Then you get drafted in 2006,
yep.
right? Stay with the Saints for a few years.
So
did you enjoy any of that time? And I'm asking you the same thing, and you the same thing too. Like, did you enjoy college? Did you enjoy the first part
college.
Of your NFL?
So
career?
I of course I enjoyed college. College was the most amazing stop of my life. I loved everything
no deals,
about it.
No nothing.
Bruh, it was just it's football. You know what I'm saying? The business is not. There's no business side of it. That's you know what I mean. You getting a contract.
For you, it was a little different.
Chill out.
No business. Right. No big business back then.
No contracts. There's no agents. There's like none of, we're not getting involved in none of this. It's just, let's go out here and we about to play football. You know what I'm saying? It's me versus you. It's me versus you. We're going to see what time it is at the end of the day. And for me, I love college because, like I said, I became a man at that stop. And so I think the thing for me, like I said, I was going through a lot of trauma, a lot of hurt. When I got drafted to New Orleans, I had to quickly switch my focus because I got there 5 months after Hurricane Katrina.
And so there was nobody there. The place, you know, looked like a war zone. You know what I'm saying? I remember there was curfew. You had to be inside by like 8, 9 o'clock.
Word.
I mean, one or two fast food restaurants was open, Sonic's and like, you know, some other restaurant, Popeyes. That was it that was open at that time period. And so.
Damn, that's crazy.
He coming from Hollywood to that.
From LA, right, immersed into this, and it was a life-changing experience.
Is that, bro. Is that the reason why your agent didn't want you to go to the Saints?
Yeah, so the reason, when I'm getting drafted, so this is the night before the draft, right? I'm supposed to go number one overall to Houston. My agent had been talking to Houston's GM, Charlie Casserly, at the time, through the entire process. I didn't even interview, you know, you go to the combine. I didn't even interview with the other 31 teams because they was just like, he not going to be here.
Wow.
So I only interviewed with Houston, Texans.
That's a good feeling, boy. You're right.
I only spoke to Houston. That was it. So everything I'm thinking is I'm going to Houston. I'm looking for property down there already. And then the night before, we find out on ESPN that Mario Williams is going first on the ticker.
Ah.
Oh, that's how we found out.
Oh, wait, you didn't know until the...
They didn't call us, no nothing. Oh. Right? So we found out. Da-na-na. You see the thing come across, Mario Williams, number one pick. We was like, what the? And so my agent's calling. And then obviously the Saints got the second pick. And then the Jets have the third pick. So at that time, Saints don't have a home stadium. You know, it just went through all the destruction.
Did not want to go there.
And it's like, that's probably not the best situation to go into. And my agent was like, we want to go to New York, third pick. Big city. Marketing, you know what I'm saying? You're going to make a lot more money. So I was like, you know, kind of sold an idea, like, all right, let's do it. But Sean Payton, so my agent called Sean Payton and was like, hey, don't draft us. We're not coming. Don't draft us, right? And Sean's like, this verbatim, fuck you. I'm drafting Reggie Bush and hung the phone up.
That's not like Sean Payton.
Yeah. Swear to God, hung the phone up. And then Drew Brees called me, like, right after that. And they had just signed Drew. And I was still just all over the place. I didn't know what to think. And so Drew called me. He was like, hey, man, listen, I just played with LaDainian Tomlinson. I think he's one of the greatest running backs I ever played with. But I think you have an opportunity to be just as good or better. And I can't wait to play with you. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, right there on the spot. That just changed everything, the way I felt about the place I was going. It just, in that time period, it felt good to be wanted. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so Drew call you, it's like, all right, let's go do this. You know what I'm saying?
How is your relationship with Coach Payton?
Like, great. Love Coach.
I'm not surprised by his response to
Siegel. Yeah, that's how Coach is. And
y'all still communicate?
Still tight. Yeah. Coach is at Fox now with us.
Yeah, Fox, yeah.
He does the pregame show. But you know, I think here's the thing about that situation. When I look back on it, thank God I went to New Orleans Saints, because at that time period, when I was dealing with a lot of hurt and pain, it was like New Orleans was right there to pick me up, you know what I'm saying? And it just gave me a new focus. Once I went down there, once they took me down there after I got drafted and I flew down there, the first thing they took me to was to the Ninth Ward, to all the hoods, everywhere where all the destruction was. And you could see the water lines on the houses. There was a spray paint number on the house with a number of bodies that was found in the house.
Oh.
And this was all through, you know, all through New Orleans. And so I think as soon as I landed, they took me there, seeing that, it just completely shifted like my purpose. Mm. And I started to feel like, okay, I got a new purpose now. I gotta lock in and focus on. I gotta leave this college stuff behind me. I gotta leave this Heisman stuff behind me, because these people need me right now. You know what I'm saying? And I didn't realize as much as they needed me, I needed them. I needed something like that at that time period to be able to shift my purpose so I could stop thinking about and stop hurting over what was happening at the college level. You know what I'm saying? And so going into that situation in New Orleans and then winning a Super Bowl 4 years later, I mean, I couldn't have scripted a better story. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the thing is sometimes we can be our worst enemy. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes we got to learn how to let go and let God. You know what I'm saying? And look where it took me. Had I went to the New York Jets, Holy, oh, trash.
Trash. Relax. Relax. Relax.
Yeah, we're the Jets. That's my team. That's my team.
We would have been trash. But nah, it's, you know, looking back on just experiences I went through in New Orleans, the people I met down there, going down there and physically helping people rebuild homes, getting on top of these houses, and just seeing their face, hearing the thank yous, hearing the, you know, the support that we had the entire time that we was down there, to just really changing the culture. You know, to everything I went through down there, man, I'm so grateful that I ended up going there because it really changed my life and just gave me a new perspective on life. And I just started to, I felt right there on the spot, like, the stuff I'm dealing with is not as important as the stuff these people are doing and going through. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They going through way worse. I'm over here stressing and hurting over something that is gonna get fixed anyway at some point in time. I knew that that situation would correct itself. I just had to kind of let go.
Did it?
It's, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you got the trophy back?
It's on the way back.
It's on the way back?
It's coming back.
How important is that to you? Like that, you see it in his eyes, like that's like
it's so, on the way back.
He went through years of trauma.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Why is that so important?
And why did you give it back?
Well, so here's the thing.
You gotta know that story.
Here's the thing. And at the time period, first of all, I didn't want to give it back. I was forced to give it back because the Heisman Trust. So here's the thing. I interviewed with one guy from the NCAA, and that was it. The Heisman Trust and the NCAA are two separate businesses. They don't work together. But I never interviewed with the Heisman Trust, or we had a conference call. So they made a decision to take the Heisman Trophy based on a conference call and based on, you know, some information that was given that they basically got through the NCAA. The issue with that is the NCAA didn't do their homework, you know what I'm saying? Which led to just a bunch of lies, bro, honestly, just a bunch of lies. And, you know, so most recently, T-Mac, Tom McNair, you know T-Mac, was my running back coach at USC. And
Hold on, before you go there, and I know people, Brandon, stop cutting off Reggie.
Yeah,
shut go up. Ahead. Bro, like what Shady said, like you ain't have to physically give it back though. Like you I literally went in your crib and took it off
right,
the shelf
right.
And packed it up and shipped it to.
But here's the thing.
Couldn't have been me.
It wouldn't have been you?
I can't find a trophy.
Me. I don't know where it's at, sir.
Come look for it. I don't know where it's at.
What?
Here's the thing.
The Heisman?
Right.
What?
When they came back and they said that they were going to strip me of the Heisman Trophy, no matter, regardless, at that time I was like, well, why would I keep a pointless trophy? You know, something that has no value to it. You know what I'm saying? If you guys say that you're going to strip me of this trophy, then I'm going to give it back to you. And at that time period, I got to be honest, I did not know when it would come back, but I knew at some point in time I was going to get the Heisman Trophy back. And that was more of a spiritual feeling, bro. I have to be honest, it was more of a spiritual feeling that I had on the inside. It was a let go and let God moment, because the human side of me was like, F y'all, I'm not giving this back. Like you said, I won this. You know what I'm saying? I grinded for this. I worked for this. And so for me at that time, I had to just let go and let God. Like, you know what? I'm going to return it. But I know at some point in time, the facts are going to come out.
Right.
The truth is going to come out. Right. And here we are. You know what I'm saying? NCAA obviously had to 9-0 with the Supreme Court ruling. And now, you know, kids can benefit off their name, image, and likeness, which I think is a great thing. But
you would have cashed out.
But as far as my story goes, where I was getting to, my running back coach at the time, T-Mac, Tom McNair, filed a lawsuit against the NCAA for defamation of character.
Yep.
And because the way it works, the only way that the NCAA can penalize you is they have to link somebody from the university with knowledge that whatever was happening. They said that T-Mac knew what was happening and he was a part of it, right? And so another example would be Penn State, right? The reason why they hit Penn State so hard over the Jerry Sandusky was because Joe Paterno, they found out, knew about everything that was happening.
Right.
On campus. So they found out he knew, which is why they brought down the hammer. Well, in my case, it was T-Mac, right? And T-Mac filed this lawsuit against the NCAA back 2010, maybe?
Yep. Right.
They just settled the case about 6 months ago.
Wow. Right?
And so T-Mac won.
$8 million.
NCAA had to pay him $8 million. So what you got to understand is now the biggest link to whatever case the NCAA felt like they had, they just lost to him. They just had to pay him $8
million. And that's how you
and
get.
And that's, sorry?
And that's how y'all got to the
that's how we're getting to, you know, back to the Heisman Trophy because, like I said, there are a lot of lies that were told, you know, during my story. And you've never, ever seen me
talk about it.
Talk about it, ever.
Yeah,
I've never sat down, I've never spoken to anybody about it because, like I said, when I went to New Orleans, I had to quickly shift my focus and focus on that. But also, I knew at some point in time, the truth was gonna come out.
So can you, because a lot of people watching this may not know the story.
Yeah.
Can you just get everybody caught up to speed on exactly what the NCAA said you did or didn't do?
Honestly, I'm not even 100% sure what they said I did it.
I know.
The point is,
I'm talking about T-Mac didn't know nothing.
I'll be honest, Reggie.
I'm talking about from a specific thing. If you go back and read the report, it's very vague on the things that they're alleging that I did. And the other thing you have to understand is my case is built off of hearsay.
Right.
Factual evidence. The NCAA never proved anything against me.
What did they say you did? Because I never read
that. They said we were taking money and that was, I guess that was it.
Pay for a house.
But here's the thing.
Pay for house rent.
Here's the thing about the house. They never spoke to my parents. The NCAA never interviewed my parents.
What?
They never spoke to my parents, ever. Not once. I'm the only person that was investigated and had a conversation with the NCAA, right? They never spoke to my parents. They put my roommate at my time, my best friend, Thomas Williams, they put him into a room by himself, no representation. They at one end of the table, he all the way at the other end side of the table, and it was literally like they were just throwing out pictures and stuff like, oh, do you know this guy? Do you know this guy? Right. Who's this? What's this? And that was for the most part it. They never spoke to anybody else. I mean, they spoke to T-Mac, and they spoke to this one other guy who was responsible, you know, basically for me losing the Heisman Trophy. But the NCAA never spoke to my parents, you know, nothing like that. So what you got to understand is in my case, nothing has ever been proven.
Right.
Nothing. They've never proven anything. There was never been any proof that I was given all this money. All these things were just alleged.
Right.
But there was no factual evidence. And so going back to the house, what he just said, right?
Omar Kelly, super producer.
Right. So there was this house my parents moved into.
He took some water. He had some water.
There was this house my parents moved into. And the reason why my parents moved into this house was because they used to live in a townhome. And they were renting this townhome. My parents come home one day, eviction letter on the door, they got to move out. Not because they weren't paying rent, but because the owners weren't paying the mortgage. Mm-hmm. And so when the owners weren't paying the mortgage, the bank came and foreclosed on it, and my parents got to move out. And so now they're in a spot where they're looking for a crib, they got nowhere to go. There's some guys that are family friends of ours. One of the guys named Michael Pettiford owns a house that he has, and I think part of his business was real estate. He had a couple different properties. So my parents moved into this house as a last minute resort because all of this was sudden. All of this was happening, you know, just kind of thrown on them. They weren't warned about this or anything like that. And so when they moved into this house, it was kind of like a short term just to help us move into a place until they could find out where that next place was gonna be,
right?
But moving into that house, was the house that the NCAA plastered all across the world as if this was a house that was given to us as a part of me, you know, my name, image, and likeness being sold for whatever. I don't know what they think. But the NCAA, what I just told you, that my parents had to move out of the house, the original townhome, because they were being evicted, the NCAA does not know that piece of information right now. Mm. They have never, ever heard that. Damn. Because they didn't do their homework. It's a sloppy investigation. Oh. Everything about the investigation was sloppy. They didn't do their homework. They didn't talk to my parents. They didn't talk to any of our family members, anything. They just got information, hearsay information, from one guy, and that's what that's...
What's broken about the NCAA? Because you've been through this experience. You also talked about, you know, in 2020, I read something where you said, if what happened to you never happened, we probably wouldn't be here when it comes to what you said, name, image, likeness, nil, right? Yeah. College athletes can now monetize their name, image, likeness.
Yeah. And the thing was, I wasn't trying to monetize off my name, image, and likeness. That's the craziest thing. Like, name, image, and likeness, that's a whole separate deal as far as my situation, right? We had family, friends that we entrusted, that we thought were literally people who were going to church with us. You gotta understand, these dudes was going to church with my parents. They had a close relationship. And so the guy that my parents, the house they ended up moving into, was a guy who was a family friend, somebody they trusted, not somebody who was coming to us on my behalf to try to sign me to anything. Like, we known, I met them when I was a sophomore in high school. So I had known them for a while, known their family, everything. And like I said, they were going to church with my parents. And so, you know, you go to church with somebody's family, like...
Your family.
You know what I'm saying? And so these were people that we trusted, you know, that, you know, ended up, you know, going to the NCAA, sitting down with the NCAA and telling the NCAA lies about things that, and with no factual proof, you know what I'm saying? And so you asked me what's broken about the NCAA. As far as my case, it was a sloppy investigation. There was something that did not need to happen, did not have to happen. And it could have been fixed very easily if they simply just did their homework. You know what I'm saying? When we were all waiting for whatever the ruling was going to be, I swear to God, we all thought it was going to get thrown out because of just lack of evidence. So we felt like this case about to get thrown out because they literally have no evidence. They got nothing. And when they came back with the ruling, we was like, what the, are you serious?
Yeah.
How did you get to that? You know, from just the lack of evidence that y'all have.
I hear you talking about like the process in the system. Mm-hmm. That's black and white. Can you prove it or not, right? Mm-hmm. Did I do it or not? You got me on camera. Do you have the facts down? Yes or no? What I'm not hearing is, you know, what you could have done differently. I'm not trying to grill you and put you in the hot seat.
Why would he do anything different? What I'm saying is, like,
what I'm saying is, right? You got nil. We know the whole system was broken from the beginning. It was flawed from the beginning. So we can look at your situation and say, well, they didn't prove it, so they should have never ruled on it, right? Should have never went that way.
Yeah.
But there could be a situation where it's like, you know, yeah, I may have done something here or there. Right?
Nothing. There was never anything in that situation that I felt like I did wrong. Nothing. Not at all. Not one thing. Mm. Because what you also got to understand is that, like I just said, these guys were family friends of ours. Two guys. One guy's name is Michael Michaels, and the other guy's name is, Michael Michaels, and the other guy's name is Lloyd Lake. And these are two guys who were friends of ours. Like I said, family friends, known them since high school, right? My family is cool with their family. When somebody hides their identity from you or who they truly are, they're doing it for a reason.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the point of hiding your identity? So both these guys are convicted felons, both of them convicted felons, and the NCAA did not care to check their police record, did not care to put any value to the fact that maybe these dudes are trying to blackmail us, or maybe these dudes are, you know, lie to us about who they were. When you hide your identity from somebody, you're doing that for a reason, right? And so these dudes hid their identity of who they truly were. We had no idea they were convicted felons. We had no idea. And the NCAA did not care to go and check that information. Look at the history of the guys that you're sitting down with.
Right.
Who are they? Right. What are they?
Right.
One of the dudes, Lloyd Lake, got a police record as long as the Cheesecake Factory menu. Okay. I mean,
goddamn, he beat me.
But it's, if the NCAA just did a little homework, bro. That's all we asked for. Just do a little homework. You know what I'm saying? Do a little research. Do a little. Do this situation justice. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what it deserves. And it was just held. It was just handled very sloppy. And I'll never forget. At the time, a guy named Paul D. Paul D used to be the athletic director at University of Miami when Miami was at its height. And if you know the story of Paul D, you know the story of Paul D. Paul D also was fired for his role with the Ponzi scheme, with the guy who was running the U. He was giving the money, donation, all that stuff. So Paul D.
Nevin is who he
became, was boys with this dude. They proved he was dirty, fired him. 2 years later, Paul D is the head judge over my case.
Whoa.
So now you gotta understand, like, there's so many layers to my story, right? It's not just, oh, you know, he gave the Heisman Trophy back, or it's deep. It's way deeper than that. And these are things that I've never spoken about. I've never talked about.
You talked about, so earlier you were talking about.
Hold on, let me get back to what I was gonna say. Yeah. So Paul D puts out a statement. I forget who he was interviewing with, but I never forget. It said, high profile athletes deserve high profile compliance. And that was his statement about me when he was going through the Heisman and why they came down with the penalty. And I just never forget at that time, just feeling it was a double standard. Cause this dude literally was boys with the guy who was Ponzi scheme, stealing money from people and investing and doing whatever he was with it, giving it to the U, all this stuff. And this guy is the head judge over my case. Why is that?
Wow.
Why is he the head judge of my case? This is the dirtiest dude that you could have possibly found.
Right.
To be the head judge of my case.
Right.
So I'm not Paul D, but I have to assume in that situation, he wants to vindicate himself.
Right.
I got to prove to these people I'm worthy. I'm not this thief that they thought I was. So let me come in here and let me be the judge over this case. And let me prove myself. This is one of the biggest cases in the history of the NCAA.
Yeah.
Just fell right in my lap. What am I going to do? What are you going to do?
Wow.
When you feel like you got to prove yourself again? You going to try to...
You over it? Because you talked about internalizing...
Internalizing...
The trauma.
Yeah.
Right?
Am I...
Are you over it? Have you forgiven the NCAA? Because right now you're sitting here and you're adamant about,
but
like,
this is the first time he don't really have...
I know.
He don't really let loose on everything.
I haven't really spoken about it.
Well, you're not to a therapist? Not to Lil, your wife?
I mean, my wife, yeah, she know everything.
So are you over it? Like, not over it, but have you
this
dealt
story
with
is
it?
Not over. How am I going
to...
It's still
yet.
Going.
Yeah.
That's the thing that people had to understand about my story is that the case has always been open. It's never been closed. Because the T-Max lawsuit against the NCAA took 10 years for him to win, 10 plus years. I knew at the time period, once T-Max filed the lawsuit, I knew, you know, I was thinking maybe 3 years, 4 years, he would win. And then that's when I would then be able to give them, you got physical proof now. You can't get out of this.
Right.
Now you got physical proof that y'all lied. You know what I'm saying? And I just didn't think it was going to take 10.
So how do they make it right with you, if they can at all? How do they make it right with you?
Getting back my Heisman Trophy, that's where y'all can start. But, you know, the Heisman, so my attorneys have been in conversations and have been talking to the Heisman Trust and the NCAA. And so what you got to understand is when T-Mac won the lawsuit, the case, the $8 million, I don't know if you guys remember last year, the NCAA released a statement basically saying that they weren't going to go back and revisit any cases. And then they also added a tag at the end, at the bottom, paid for play, basically insinuating that I was paid to play. Which, at that time period, when that statement was released, behind closed doors, they had just settled this case. Mm. So you're releasing a statement about me while behind closed doors,
you're trying to
clean up and sweep up. You know, what's happening, what's going on, you know what I'm saying, with the defamation of character lawsuit, which is their biggest link to penalizing us. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So for me, at that time period, you releasing a statement about me, you're spreading a lie about me, it's not true, and behind closed doors, you're trying to clean up the evidence.
Right.
So the reason why it wasn't blasted all over media is because they got a non-disclosure agreement. Mm. So a non-disclosure agreement keeps it quiet.
Yeah.
Mm. So now, just get swept under the rug. You know what I'm saying? And so you got to understand, that's who I'm dealing with. That's the kind of people I'm dealing with. You know what I'm saying?
This thing big.
So you can't,
they're like a gang.
Yeah, it's like
no, ain't no gang mafia. Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Like,
what am I supposed to do with that?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? The same people who reinstated Joe Paterno before me. After what happened on that campus. So
I gotta be honest with you, bro. Coming in, I was like, yeah, he did it. Straight up. But sitting here, bro, you adamant. I mean, how many years later you're sitting here like, nah, you leave.
Well, did what though? Did what?
I mean, the house? Talk about
he
the
house.
He
just explained that.
Right.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Took some money. You know what I mean?
That was never in
what
the
What define though. Take some money though? Like, what if somebody were to come up
to you? Yo, we want you to play at SC. I'm going to give you $300,000. Boom, it's right there.
Never happened. That USC never gave me anything. Never gave me anything. I got a $1,000 scholarship check per month. I mean, a tuition check per month. What is not tuition? What is it?
Stipend.
Yeah. Stipend check. Yeah, $1,000 a month.
All the
check.
Players get it when you're on scholarship.
All I had to live off of was $1,000 per month in LA. My rent alone, me and my roommate, we split, was $1,480. So that's $740 a piece. Before you can get groceries, before you can pay your bills, before you can get some gas in the car to go wherever you got to go to. to get to school.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Before you can do any of that, you already down to $260. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
How are you supposed to survive off of that?
What?
So to me, that's where you asked me what's wrong with the NCAA. It's bigger than that. It's the whole college system that needed to be reworked, right? There's no reason why I should be at home hungry. You know what I'm saying? Starving. Like literally starving, hungry.
I agree with that.
After a game, on campus, or whatever that is. Like, yeah, did we have food? Yeah, but that food was horrible. It was the same spaghetti and hard chicken. It was banquet food. That's what it was, banquet food. Like, you got the hard chicken and I'm a top athlete. Like, I need to be eating the best because your body has to perform at the best. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right. And that's a big thing right now. So, like, how do you expect the NIL deal to, I guess, help from guys being hungry late at night? You know what I mean? Me personally, I took the money. I tell y'all.
If I could go back, I wish I did. I mean, I wish half the stuff that they said. Just half of the stuff they said I was doing, I wish I actually did it. Because at least it would have been for something, you know what I'm saying? Rather than for nothing. And that's the thing, like, again, going back to the college experience, we was broke. We didn't have shit. Like, we didn't have no money. Like, I was driving a 1996
Ford Ranger with a shell on the back. It's a pickup truck.
What year was this?
This is 2003, 2004.
Because on my recruiting trip with you, we was in the Benz.
Y'all mean, I can't, look. And then look, check it out. I can't do no lying. Hold up, hold up. And then listen.
I'm lying.
No, I'm not. Check it out.
Bruh.
Then the next time, then I hung out with Matt Liner and Lindell White. Now, you know if I'm lying or not, watch this. I went to their crib, they had apartment looking, I could see the
Stable Center. Oh yeah, them they have
my trip.
I didn't have that
I can't make this up.
I didn't have that shit.
You exactly right, because Show came to Tennessee when he left
I can't make this up.
And he was showing me pictures. I'm like, God damn, y'all was already in the league.
Yo, and look, yo, listen. Dwayne Jarrett was the wide receiver. He pull up in the range.
What? No, he said he lying. Stop playing, bro.
Yo, look.
Hey, he put extras on
a
it.
Benz?
He put extras on
a
it. He put extras on it.
I'm so hungry. In the Benz. then look, Liner, Staples Center. I'm 17. I'm like, yo, I remember having a next tail.
Lying, boy.
Saying like, yo, they the real stars.
They the real stars.
Hey, hook that boy up to a lie detector right now. Yo, that boy up.
The Staples Center, am I lying about that?
I didn't live by the Staples Center.
But I'm saying, Liner and them had.
You gotta ask Matt about that, bro. I don't know where he lives.
Oh, he good at this.
I don't know where Matt lives. I never went to his crib.
I'm in a bind.
Yo, I ain't never went to their crib, so I don't know where they
you,
live.
You done?
Am I done?
You done? Because you had a lot to get off of your chest. I want to make sure you had a... That was really good, bro.
Thank you for sharing. Going to the games, Reggie Bush, first of all, I can't name maybe three players bigger than Reggie Bush in college.
Just one.
I'm thinking about like Tebow was crazy big. Not talent.
I don't know Tebow.
I'm just saying the name.
No, he
Tebow was big.
So my thing is like, yeah, owe him that. Reggie Bush in college was crazy. So my thing like yo, how is it that he can't like now? Okay, so let's say if he was now, right? Mm-hmm. The NIL, all the deals they got.
Oh,
the young boy he's from Pitt, the wide receiver now. What's his name again? Addison.
Oh, Jordan Addison.
He went to Pitt. He left Pitt to go to USC.
He's balling right now.
Hold up.
He's balling.
He told me that Alabama offered him about $6 million. All these people offered him all this money.
That's different now.
What I'm saying is they made a big deal, but he owed that.
They at least owe him six.
Trophy is some millions. Look,
I mean, hurry up, call him right now.
Listen, I wasn't trying to be funny, bro. Because I mean, I think it's an honor for you to sit on our show.
They get hurt because
you could have went anywhere else. You could have went anywhere else. So I appreciate you, and I want to make sure you have
the space needed
to get everything off your chest.
Here's the thing: is that information could have easily been researched by anybody. If anybody wants to go and actually do their homework, it can easily find that information out. This ain't groundbreaking evidence. It's just groundbreaking because I've never talked about it. Mm. But this ain't nothing new.
We thank you for that.
We've been dealing with this behind closed door for the last 15 years, whatever it is long as it's been. So for me, it's nothing new. I've just been sitting here being patient, waiting, you know what I'm saying? That's it. And knowing that at some point in time, the situation was going to correct itself.
So when you receive that trophy back, what's the first thing you're going
to
do?
Probably show it to my kids.
I love it.
Show it to my kids. Show it to my wife. I feel like that experience was robbed of them, you know what I'm saying? Being able to see, you know, one of daddy's greatest accomplishments, you know, at home on the trophy stand. And that's about it, bro. I already won it. You know what I'm saying? I already gave my acceptance speech on it. You know what I mean?
It's the speech too, bro. You're going to cry.
It is what it is. Like,
you're going to cry, Reggie. Be honest, bro.
I don't know.
Be vulnerable.
Listen, bro. I'm all cried out on God. I'm all cried out. I've already cried all my tears. I've already been through that. You know what I'm saying? And so for me, getting it back is just going to be for my kids, for my family.
Damn, Shay, you see how impactful this is?
I ain't crying either.
I know, but but that's how much it means to him, though.
But I think, you know, this for me, I'm such a, like, my family is now my focus. You know what I'm saying? At this stage of my life, that's my focus is all about them. It's all about
creating the best experience, best childhood, you know what I'm saying, I can for my kids. Giving them everything that I never had, that we never had, because they deserve that, you know what I'm saying? And I'm coaching my kids in just about every damn sport. You know, I feel like I'm a better athlete now than I was playing football because I got to speak to so many different sports now. I got to wear so many different hats. Right. My daughter plays tennis, golf. My son plays basketball, baseball, golf. My youngest son is playing baseball, golf as well. You know what I'm saying? So,
and Lil, it's ballroom dancer.
You
said this. I got a house of probably 10 kids.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But when I talk about my family, you know what I mean? What I didn't have, what I want them to have, the kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm getting an eye because, like, I'm always talking about kids, and I get a joy to hear us as black men, you know what I mean, talk about family and talk about some of the things that you want them to have that we never had. Like, and I can see it in your eyes, like the joy of what you're saying. Like, football's football, but I can tell that you're really happy and comfortable and content about football, but like life is about the kids. Like,
yeah, because when you life. After you retire, you start to realize like life was bigger than football. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? At that time, like, football was everything. You know what I'm saying? Football was it. You know what I'm saying? And then when you finish that stage, that chapter in your life, now we old because we all sitting here now. You know what I'm saying?
It's, I'm as old as you guys.
You're old, Shady.
You are old.
It's, you know, there's different chapters in your life, you know what I'm saying? And for me, this next chapter in my life is the focus on, you know, being the best version of myself, but also being the best father that I can be, being the best husband that I can be. You know, my goals now are so different from when I was younger in my 20s of things that I want to do and accomplish now, because, you know, you start to realize my purpose is bigger and was always bigger than football. Right. But when you in football, you feel like this is it, and this is who I am. And the issue with that is when you find your identity in football, at some point in time, football's gonna let you down, right? At some point in time, you're gonna lose.
Yeah.
At some point in time, you're gonna get injured, and you're gonna be on the shelf, right? Or you're gonna be getting replaced, right? We all been replaced. Yep. And so that's the issue.
Can you admit that, Shady? I've personally never played with nobody better than me. Never.
He's the only one to think, bro.
I'm just telling you the truth. But I do want to ask you this.
The issue, hold on, let me finish my point real quick. The issue with that was when you find your identity in football, like I said, you know, football is going to let you down at some point.
11 years in the league, about 55 touchdowns. I know your numbers. Are you happy with your career?
Absolutely. I wish, the only thing I wish was different is I didn't get as injured as I did, you know.
And you can't control that, though.
You can't control that. You can't control the injuries, you know. And that's the only thing I felt like that ever slowed me down. Was just getting injured. I felt like if I never got injured, my career would have been a lot different. But as y'all know, it's 100% injury rate in the league. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Right. That's
so,
right.
You know, and at the running back position, we take a lot of trauma. You know what I'm saying? Playing in them trenches. The human body is only built to take so much. You know what I'm saying? And at some point, it was 2007, first year I got injured, tore my PCL. Next year, tore my medial meniscus, then had microfracture surgery, same year. Then the next year, we win the Super Bowl.
Right.
Like, it's crazy how shit just work out, you know what I'm saying? And for me, you know, I don't know how injured y'all been before, had surgeries, but...
I never had a surgery. Oh, in high school, I did.
I had 3-4 neck surgeries, though.
Coming back from injury is one of the dangerous. Hardest things to do, you know what I'm saying? And so... You know, that's obviously, this is so tough, you know, trying to come back from injuries. But that's the only thing I wish was different was just the injuries portion of it I wish didn't happen.
I mean, that's what ended your career, right?
Basically. Yep.
Rams
had a slip and fall.
But you got paid
slip
for
and fall.
It.
You got paid for it.
I got paid for it.
You got paid for it.
Yeah, man.
Hey.
What happened like that? How much they broke you off?
12.5.
Oh, my God.
12.5.
That was the greatest injury ever. I'm about to slip right now.
Most of them backs, we owe to Reg, though. Like me, McCaffrey, who else? All them, like, them backs, they owe him. Because they wasn't looking at dudes like us. They took dudes like Marino and Chris Beanie Wells because of that. You know what I'm saying? So we do owe you that.
And I watched Barry.
That was my guy. I was watching Barry as much as I humanly possibly could. That was the guy. Like, I tried to pattern my game after. It was Barry Sanders and Deion Sanders.
And Gale Sanders.
My two favorites ever of all time.
Who had more crazy work, you or Shady?
Crazy work?
Yeah.
Shady has some work. Shady has some crazy work. He has some. Better.
He's my idol, but
better. He only played running back. See, I played receiver. I played punt returner. I did kickoff return. I did everything.
My moves is like crazy. Like, bah, 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 bah. So you won't sit it no more.
So you have more crazy work?
Yeah.
Right.
I did more.
I play running back. I don't know about nothing else.
That's what I'm saying. Listen, he can't speak to all
time
that.
Out. Crazy work is like
top five highlights in the NFL. Let's talk about NFL
he
first.
Top
five
highlights
with college.
College ain't no comparison.
College
ain't no comparison. But NFL, you take your top five highlights against his top five.
Not Reggie's. Everybody's in the room.
Like producers, wives, you, him, everybody.
You got crazy work, but you don't have no crazy work when you're going 60, 70 yards and scoring a touchdown. I haven't seen you take off on nobody. Now, you got a lot of yards, but you ain't got no. Trust me, I asked producers, I've been trying to. What's your longest touchdown?
I got numbers.
What's your longest touchdown?
That your numbers can't touch.
What is your longest touchdown?
Take it easy.
I ain't played running back. What's your longest touchdown?
If I did, like.
I'm just asking you a question. Can you
answer? I don't know. I got a lot of touchdowns. I don't know. 100,
what's your longest?
I got like 100 touchdowns. I don't know. I don't know. A lot of them. 100. I don't know what you're going to tell me. What are you talking about?
I got to go. Go
first time I went to, first, so when I got traded to Miami.
Oh, Lord. Right,
this dude. First of all, when I got there, I was like, this is the biggest damn receiver I've ever seen in my life. This dude is huge.
Tight end.
Like, I got this dude on the outside. We about to go to work. But I just never forget that team we was on, man. That team was crazy in Miami. I never seen so many fights. In training camp, bro, we had fights every day. Every
was
single
it him?
Day. Nah, it wasn't all him. It was some him, but it wasn't all him. A lot of it was like
truth,
our O-line.
Tell I just wanted to compete.
He was a competitor. Competitive maniac. All he wanted to do was win. But I just remember going to that team, and we had so many good players on that team in Miami. We just needed better coaching.
Right.
But just,
that was your first year going over 1,000, right?
It was my first year going over 1,000.
It was grinding too.
It was nice too. He had 200 yard games and everything.
We was going ham that year. But just
22.
When we got on the same team, man, I saw B. Marshall's work ethic up front. You know what I'm saying? I saw the kind of man he was, the kind of person he was.
Oh.
And I know his story. I know what you've been through, where you came from. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciate just where you are right now, big dog, because you made it. You know what I'm saying? You got through it. You fought through it. And just like everybody here, we've all been through some shit. You know what I'm saying? That's right. Each one of our stories is a movie. Each one of our stories is a movie. You know what I'm saying? We've all been through some crazy stuff. I know you've been through some crazy stuff. Shady, you crazy as hell.
Y'all in your own group, actually. I don't really have.
Bro, he might be the craziest one.
Roger's never met with me personally.
I never met Goodell.
But just all y'all stories, man, and everybody being here right now, being able to talk, you know what I'm saying, being able to do this, I think it's so dope. So for one, congratulations on everything y'all doing, because I think this is dope. And it's a different perspective, you know what I'm saying, from a football player's lens, you know what I'm saying? And to me, that's a perspective that a lot of the world needs to hear.
Can I ask you a question? Why our show and not any other platform? And I'm talking about like traditional. You could have went on any major outlet. Why our
anywhere.
Show?
You know they won't.
I mean, like I said, for one, this information is not new. This is just stuff that the main public doesn't know, you know what I'm saying? But anybody that wants to do a little research can go and find that information. It's just when I put it all together, now you understand why. Now you see the why, and that's the difference.
We had to fight to get a meal, yeah. Wrongfully accused, we had to fight to get the pills. That's why we write to get a deal. He on the team, he gotta eat, you know. Despite your skills, facts. Keep it riding for the fam, you got a light that we're getting wheels straight up. Look in the past bag, work up in the trash bag. I'll pass a lie to take the test before I pass class. Yeah, and my family needed bread, I had to come correct. That's why I keep airing it out like I just passed gas.